Blog Talk Radio.
Are you looking to make your next event sizzle? Then you want to get in touch with Lee Entertainment. Mark Lee, the founder of Lee Entertainment, has worked with such notable festivals as the Art of Cool, the National Black Theater Festival, the Bull Durham Blues Festival, and the Durham Centerfest, as well as the Festival of the Eno, and definitely can provide you with some great entertainers as well as help you make your event sizzle if you're looking forward to trying to have an event in your town. Mark Lee is willing to travel anywhere in this country to make your event sizzle and has entertainers that are also willing to travel as well. So if you're looking for quality entertainment, definitely get in touch at bluesradio@gmail.com.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. Darren, I think when you said you were going to revoke Mark's black card, it cut us off, but we got right back to the show. So
we didn't all move. It's all Darren's fault.
Hey, man, all I know is I hear the conversation, and all of a sudden it just cut me off, and I was like, well, wait a minute. Let's pull to the side and get this right. You know, Blog Talk, stop
taking Mark's
with
card.
Us, we won't take your car yet, Mark. I gotta advocate for you, bro. We cannot take it. So we'll get
but
back into the show. I'll let y'all take it over.
Yeah.
No doubt. But I will go see both of them. You know, they both played in Northgate. One of my other jobs is over there right in the middle of Northgate. So I have no excuse for not going to see them. So I will be over there checking them out this weekend. So don't worry. The card will not be revoked. I will be reporting on both of them next week.
Cool. But you asked an interesting and important question when you start talking about the writing of Black Panther. Now, keeping in mind that comic book has a 50-year history, starting in 1966. But the important other factoid is that the first 30 years were white writers, and the past 20 years have been primarily black writers. So Christopher Priest, Reginald Hudlin, Ta-Nehisi Coates, Roxane Gay, Nnedi Okorafor, Evan Narcisse, these are all black writers. So then you also look at the fact that Ryan Coogler, even though he was directing the film, he also played a hand in writing it along with another brother who was a writer. So there's that. And then we start to talk about, okay, well, how did the storyline play out? What did we see that comes out of those narratives that were scripted by the black writers? And if we talk about Ta-Nehisi Coates, with him having been involved for the past 2 years or so, it's interesting to note what aspects of his storyline have been brought into the screen version and depiction relative to the Black Panther and the Marvel Cinematic Universe. There's that discussion that certainly can be engaged. There's also the whole other discussion around the representation of Wakanda, what we see there. And we should be very highly celebratory of the fact that there were a host of other hands, black creative intellectuals, that engaged in contributing to that movie in ways that made it pop and sizzle and grab a hold of our neurons in the way that it did, that have us on this perpetual expectation and desire for more.
Oh, yeah. Because one of the things that I found really interesting was that after the Panther movie came out, so many people came out kind of like getting right behind the Wakanda situation and, you know, dressing up in those kind of styles, even though we know that there have been people here in the Durham area that have been dressing in that style for a number of years. I'm thinking about, you know, somebody that we both miss dearly, Baba Chuck, was dressing Wakanda style years ago.
Yeah, if we want to say Wakanda style, but we, of course, know we're dealing with the African diaspora. We're dealing with us attaching ourselves to our African natures and ancestry in various ways, shapes, and forms, be that style relative to dress and dance, or be that in any of a number of other ways. Certainly one of the other aspects of the film, and some of that has been touched on over the decades where aspects of African languages, primarily Swahili, which it has a more recent development in regards to its formulation and use, but Hausa is a primary language, and Xhosa is another coming out of South Africa, because actually T'Challa's mother was from South Africa, and there are issues that arose with that when you go back and look in the comic books with why T'Challa's father picked a South African woman as opposed to one of Wakanda's own. But these representations are how we attach ourselves culturally to engaging African culture, keeping in mind that, you know, that's 40-plus countries, you know, over 200, close to 300 languages, the diversity of dance, language, style, and food ways are very important components of engaging and understanding the vast impression that the African diaspora has made on even these, especially these United States. Of course, when the vault at Palace International held that special gathering, and then by bus took everyone to see the movie down at South Point on Friday night, opening night, although now, you know, movie theaters have switched Thursday to a true opening night for film. But the wonderful programming that Brother Moses and his family offered up for us to get together, get dressed, and get on the bus and go see that wonderful movie and then go back and party and celebrate. But they also supported one of the panel discussions that took place there in Durham, which I put together with Jamila Davenport and Angel Dozier, which the one held there at the vault was looking at the music of Wakanda, which featured Brother Jabel Jome from Senegal and Telly Shabu, as well as several other folks on the panel, including Pierce Freelon. Probably looking to redo that panel discussion again down the road because it was really so rich. But there's a lot that can be done with that movie alone. And guess what? Get ready, because in 2 weeks, the DVD is released. I shouldn't be advertising for them since I'm not getting paid anything, but it's all right. I'm looking forward to getting my copy.
Yep. And one of the panels that you had that was very well attended was the whole panel about the role of the women in that movie.
Oh, that was so well attended that there was a whole nother panel held at Ebonique to follow through with more discussion and examination, especially of design and fashion as tied to the movie. But, yeah, that was a very well attended and highly informative panel featuring a host of major creative intellectuals from the community of Durham and beyond, because it featured Sister Oma Sadi and Dare Coulter, and don't let me pull out the flyer to name all the names, but it was a really rich gathering. And then, like I said, a second one was held at Ebonique there on Main Street there in Durham. So, yeah, the discussions continue, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they even continue to this day. And one of the things that I know was really interesting was, and we brought this up on one of, I think it was when Omasati was on the show here one time, was that there was a few people out there that got the movies confused, meaning that there was not many, but there were people that got Panther, the cartoon, and the comic confused with Panther, you know, well, any of the number of Panthers about the Black Panthers. But there are some parallels between what was going on in Wakanda and what was happening to Black Panthers. Like I said, before you called in and everything, I had gone to see at Pinhook earlier this weekend, well, last weekend,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
Black Panther the Stanley Nelson movie, and you know, even the role of women in the in that movement, and how they, you know, were, there was still some of that maybe at the beginning a little bit over patriarch kind of attitude, but then as the movement continued, they women started having more of an engaged role, particularly as more of the men got jailed and or basically taken out, basically assassinated. So there was more women taking leadership roles. I mean, there's still a lot of folks that are celebrating the life of Assata Shakur. You know, Tupac's mom was down there in Cuba and everything.
Yeah, well, I saw Assata Shakur being Tupac's auntie. I'd like to say that we are in the century of the black woman when we start to look at it relative to the sorts of impacts and higher level voices and presence that we see. And I'm looking forward to the fact that there is more to come, but to see that powerful representation in the movie says a whole lot, because as we were just talking about Nichelle Nichols having that impact and impression on a Mae Jemison, such that she would become an astronaut, just think of the powerful representations and impressions that were made relative to Okoye and Nakia and Nedora Milaje and Black Panther, and how that impacted black girls and black women. So I say, again, that we are in the century of the black woman. And so there is certainly more powerful presence and impact that will be manifest. And mark my word, Mark Lee and G, that we will be all the better for it.
Because you think about it, even some of the people that they are throwing out as potentials, I think both of them have said that they are not interested, at least one. I know it's definitely said that they're not interested, but the people that they're even throwing out from the Democratic side of the political spectrum as being the presidential candidates for 2020, two of them are definitely strong African-American women. I'm thinking about both Michelle Obama, who's the one that has definitely said, no, not happening, not really interested, and Oprah, who is, you know, she's kind of, she seems to be hedging her bets to some degree, like maybe, maybe not, but right now, no.
Well, I think there's something also to be said for does holding political office, more specifically the office of the White House, serve the best interests of our people in the long run, and is that the only way for our impact and our shift and change to be made manifest in sustainable ways? And I'm one to say, no, it isn't. That is a whole nother discussion, but I think there is certainly other things that we need to take into consideration and in essence, as they say, grab the bull by the horns and make manifest. And it comes through a word that I live by. It is the second principle of Kwanzaa. And that word is Kujichagulia. It's my most favorite word. And that word means self-determination. And so I think within the context of what we see represented in the self-determinative expressions and power of women as portrayed in the Black Panther, as the stories start to come about women in the Black Panther Party and women in the civil rights movement, there is certainly, again, more to be celebrated, examined, and utilized within the construct of strategies and visioning as Afrofuturists to make impacts on communities. Like Anna Marie Brown, who's in Detroit, who's an Afrofuturist who uses science fiction as a ways and means of encouraging the youth and visioning a different sort of urban existence, as portrayed certainly, and who gives us good example in her works, Octavia Butler, relative to grappling with post-apocalyptic America. So there's a lot of work to be done in
immersing ourselves in these texts and those stories and finding more ways to move us forward through gaining inspiration, direction, and strategy for impacting ourselves as we move through the 21st century.
Yeah, because even one of the people that I know, I don't know how she feels about you, but definitely y'all have a parallel career path, but she definitely should be an inspiration to many of the women that are trying to do a lot of big marks here in this society, being in the society around Durham and the Triangle, is another person who's got their ties to both science and the arts. And I'm thinking about Cicely Mitchell, who is one of the founders of Art of Cool, but who is by trade a statistician. And a
biostatistician. That is another clear example of this century of the black woman that I'm speaking to. And it is an Afrofuturist narrative. Here's this culture and music being brought to bear. Based on my insight and what's been posed in interviews and the like, she used, you know, statistics to guide the implementation of the unfolding logistic of the Art of Cool Festival.
Oh, no, she definitely made that very clear in some of the early meetings. I was actually on some of the early planning meetings that, you know, she was definitely using that focus and that tool and that methodology as a way to make it happen. So, and it was a very effective methodology. So one cannot argue with what they have done, and folks are looking forward to seeing what it's going to do under its new direction. But even under the new direction of Suleiman, they will still have both her and Al involved very heavily in everything. Now, you brought up the word self-determination and the Kwanzaa word for it and everything. But one of the conversations that we've had here, as more and more gentrification happens, and you've seen the growth around Durham, you've even seen the growth back in the D.C. Maryland area, which is home for you and everything, but is sometimes when people hear that word self-determination, they automatically go back to thinking about the Harlem Renaissance and the period where the Tulsas and the Durhams and these kind of cities came up. And then you have certain people that are of the opinion that it's a new era, it's a new time, we can't bring those kind of eras back. Now, Wakanda seems to be counter to that, because it's like saying, no, you can bring back strong African-American communities and they can be self-sufficient, self-driven, and all of that kind of stuff. I was wondering what Dale's view is as to whether we can bring back a new version of the Harlem Renaissance. There's even been some that have argued that we're in the middle of a new Harlem Renaissance. So I was wondering what you thought, and also whether we can create those kind of like communities that were so active when we had the Durhams and the Tulsas of the world being here, and they were such powerful forces.
Well, I think certainly, you know, when we talk about a movement of creativity, of creative intellectuals, such as Langston Hughes, Zora Neale Hurston, Claude McKay, there's times called for that. They were responding to the times in ways that were shaping identity, that were encouraging the examination of their, or looking back on it, our cultural selves. And so that sort of examination warranted art. That is one of the most powerful ways to make an impression, make an impact. So art has always been at our disposal to engage what we are challenged by, to engage ways and means of moving us through it, to serve as a certain salve, a medicine, a curative, a empowering mode of, or should we say, an empowering mojo for dealing with the time. So Harlem Renaissance was what it was. It won't be a Harlem Renaissance. Harlem did that.
Right.
You know, Harlem's been gentrified now. But I hear what you're saying. We can talk about the 60s and the art component of the civil rights movement, of the Black Power movement, was the Black Arts movement.
Right.
We can talk about how our art is transformed. The ever-changing same, moving from gospel spirituals to the blues, to jazz, to R&B, funk, to hip-hop, rap, some might say trap. But when we start to look around at what's happening, I mean, like I mentioned Janelle Monáe's album just dropping, there's a lot, oh man, she's dropping political bombs right and left on that album. So when we start to look at the example of her alone, having been in movies, playing a major player in an Afrofuturist narrative called Hidden Figures, but also playing Cindy Mayweather via her earlier albums and the like, there's something to be said for the opportunities for art to reflect back a particular direction, providing a certain vision. So I wouldn't necessarily call it a new Harlem Renaissance, but what I would say is a new mode of artistic expression with teeth, you know, that bite, that fight, that encourage others, especially younger folks, to, as they say, pardon the language, do the damn thing.
All right. I mean, we've been finding people that are coming out of the world of hip-hop that are winning, what, last week or 2 weeks ago, the Pulitzer Prize. So we're definitely seeing the impact of art.
Yeah.
I don't know that a lot of people expected Kendrick Lamar to win the Pulitzer Prize in 2018, when only 2 years earlier we had elected this person in the White House whose name we try not to talk about here on the show.
It's true. We move on. We got other fish to fry. More important
exactly.
things to do. We can worry ourselves to death over him, and what does that do but stress us out? Self-determination, Kuji Chakalia. You do as you see necessary, and you don't do that in reaction. You take in pro-action. You do as a direct abiding by the spirit and the call, and that spirit and call for artists is to create work that makes a difference, to create work that continues a long tradition of cultural expression that makes a difference. So I'm supposed to be a part of a poetry reading called The Prose of Men, which will be taking place in Raleigh on May 9th, and turns out, no, not May 9th, May 11th, but my understanding is that whole thing is sold out, but us men folks sat down on Saturday to get to know one another, and you've got multiple generations who will be serving up their specific spoken word in that program. So I'm looking forward to it.
Who are some of the other artists that are involved in that particular program, and exactly where is that program?
D.S. Will is the convener of the program primarily, and he will more or less be our guiding light in that regard. But there's a host of other folks. Without the flyer in front of me, I can't say. I can say you can go to my Facebook page and scroll down, and you'll eventually see. It's a volume 5 in a series of poetry events that he's been doing.
Oh, cool. Who is, now, we know that you've had a rich history here in the Triangle area, so you've done a wide variety of things. I mean, you worked with the Humanities Council and that old Civil Rights Trail. By the way, you'll be glad to know that somebody came by Haytai yesterday, and that was what they said, was that they were stopping by the Haytai because they had done, I think they were coming from Richmond, they had done some research and stumbled across the Civil Rights Trail, and Haytai was on the trail, so that's why they stopped by on their visit on Sunday afternoon. So they came by around 1 o'clock or so. Yeah, the church was just getting out, so it must have been around 1. But they definitely centered around that trail. But I was just wondering, you personally, and I've known you for years, what do you consider your greatest achievement in the many years that you have been here in the Triangle? And you've done so much. You've done work with Haytai, you've done work with the Blues Festival, you've done like I said, the trail. You've done so much here in the community, but what do you consider your personal greatest achievement?
Well, you sort of pigeonhole yourself when you do that. So my whole thing is it's all about sustainability. It's
right.
About how do you look at ways of continuing to be impactful and essential to community via arts, history, culture. And it's about finding ways to engage others like-minded. So the things that were being done at Hayti, of course, even previous to my getting there by you and others like Diane Pledger and so many others, is an important aspect of that whole notion of when it was my turn to come and do, that's what I did. But I can't lay claim to some sole role in making things happen. You stand on the shoulders of those who've gone before, and you look at it as, yeah, and then your shoulders become what someone else. So when I look at that and you ask me to pick something, and, you know, if there's anything, I look at the whole notion of Afrofuturism.
Right.
And when I was at Hayti, in, I guess that was 2001, the book Dark Matter came out, which was an edited collection of short science fiction written by many people, including W.E.B. Du Bois. But so there was contemporary writers and older writers who had written science fiction, and Cherie Renee Thomas edited that collection. That was a major impactful literary document to set the stage for focusing on the fact that, you know, the notion of science fiction being solely something written by, what, white folks, was not the case. That this visioning can also be done in the same context as was done by Samuel Delaney, our first major black science fiction writer, and Octavia Butler. But here were all these other voices who had written it. And so I did that in 2001. That was an Afrofuturist narrative, and that's almost at least 15 plus years ago. But then Carter Q at the Stanford Warren Library comes to me about 4 years back and says, "Daryl, we want you to do a program, and we'd like for it to be on what we know is dear to you, Afrofuturism." I said, "Okay, I'll do that." So that planted seeds. Then to do a whole series at Hayti, and then to come back and do a whole series on the Black Panther movie, all of that happens with a certain degree of Afro-spiritual, Afro-futurist spiritual connection.
Okay.
The ancestors said, make it so.
And you definitely made it so, and even incorporating your own kids into the narrative as well, because they are definitely richly talented also. There. So it's not just your generation, but I'm sure you got it from your parents and some of the people ahead of you, and now you are passing it on to your children, who I'm sure will pass it on to their children.
Yeah, well, we do as it should be done. You know, we plant the seeds. I mean, we held that art and science summer camp in 2000 at Hayti. There were kids that came out of there that went off and studied science in college. So there's that narrative in and of itself as well. But, you know, for me, I was inspired by a host of folks. I've just been dialoguing back and forth on Facebook with a couple of close poet friends who are still in D.C. and other places and spaces. But I am inspired by the book Black Fire, which was co-edited by Larry Neal and the former Leroy Jones, Amiri Baraka. And in finding that book when I was only 15 years old and letting that saturate me, it radicalized me in a way that said art has an importance. But this science intellectual me was also informed in ways that also said art and science are clearly the same within the construct of creativity to making new knowledge and conveying knowledge and examining and discovering. So, you know, for me, you to go back to your earlier referencing of right and left brain discourse and activity, yeah, I don't know any other way. I wasn't jarred at an early age such that that happens with me. It's true of a host of folks. There are scientists that play musical instruments. There are artists who engage in science. So I'm in a tradition that's much, 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 much older. One time, science and art were tied together and one and the same. We've carved everything up into so many pieces, and we do ourselves an intellectual disservice by allowing that to continue.
Yeah, that seems to be one of the problems with the education system is that we seem to have definitely downplayed the role of arts in terms of how important it is in the terms of creating critical thinkers and things of that nature. And I'm not sure that we're even playing up the role of science the way that we should, but definitely we are downplaying the role of arts in our society, particularly in the education system, at least that's my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, we talk about STEM, and we should be talking about STEAM, you know, science, technology, engineering, and math. Yes. Science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. Yes. Science, technology, engineering, Afrofuturism, and math. Even more, yes.
Yeah. Definitely should have steam with the Afrofuturism kind of wing of it. There's no doubt about that, because we definitely do not seem to incorporate so much of the rich history. And you're right, like the history that you alluded to earlier of my granddad and everything. But, yeah, there are definitely folks that have a rich science background. I mean, even my own dad, who's a known artist in the community, is definitely has a background in science as well, and is definitely a love of science. I mean, a love of all of many things, scientific and things of that nature. So there are folks out there that blend the arts and the science. I think that even Pearson, some of his stuff, he was trained by both his mom, who was a world-famous jazz singer, but he also was trained by his dad, who's an architect, which is another form of art, but also another form of science. So, Daryl, coming back to the discussion and everything, one of the things I was curious about is when you mentioned the book, the one book that you inspired you, were there other books that really inspired you? And then another observation I was going to make really quick is that you talked about W.E.B. Du Bois, and people oftentimes forget that there were other people that had a science fiction kind of nature to their history and to what they were all about. I'm not sure, but I think I read somewhere that definitely Malcolm did a little bit of creative writing. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that some of the speeches of Martin were what some people would consider Afrofuturistic. Probably even the Mountain one might be considered Afrofuturistic. Hello? Did we get cut off again?
I'm here, Mark. I think Daryl might have gotten cut off. So we'll see what happens in the next couple of minutes. It's been a weird day today, man. It's been a weird day today. So, ladies and gentlemen, it is the voice of the people. We're going to take a pause for a minute, and we'll be right back. All right, y'all, we are back.
Yep, we're back.
Mark,
did we
you
get
there?
Cut off?
All right.
I'm here.
Yeah,
I'm here.
Yeah, we got cut off. Yeah. But we just keep jumping right back on. So we're all back on the ride. They keep messing with us today, but we just keep persevering and pushing through. So it's the voice of the people, ladies and gentlemen. This conversation is about to continue, but you can join in the conversation. And hopefully we'll ride it all the way to the end. 646-668-8393.
Yeah.
Yeah, Daryl, if you're still there, as I was saying, I was just thinking about some of the nerds that people forget about that are, you know, definitely part of the Afrofuturists. You mentioned W.E.B. Du Bois, but as I was saying earlier, it seems to me I remember hearing about Malcolm doing some creative writing. It might have been when he was in prison, and definitely Martin was definitely doing some of his speeches would be considered, to some degree, kind of part of the Afrofuturistic kind of narrative. I mean, because some of these things you're talking about were things that he knew would be coming. I mean, it's also some of the preacher narrative, but it was things that might be happening in the future and not necessarily on the plane of where he was at right then and there.
The word visioning is important to focus on in the Afrofuturist narrative. And so when we talk about the fact that Dr. King's speeches were informed by Langston Hughes. So when Langston Hughes says, "I dream a world," Martin says what?
Yeah,
he talks about mountaintop. He talks about, I don't want to say that he just, Martin was a fighter. Yeah. But that visioning of wanting to see things better for our people is a visioning. That's an Afrofuturist narrative for sure.
Yeah, no doubt about that, and that's something that I think that a lot of times as we study our history, we oftentimes forget that Afrofuturistic kind of narrative. I mean, I'm sure that there would even be some people that might even argue about some of the Afrofuturistic nature of some of the earlier people, even going further back, like the Phyllis Wheatleys and the George Washington Carvers and even Harriet Tubman.
Well, you let's talk about we can talk about Gwendolyn Brooks. We can talk about Jesse Fawcett. We can talk about these earlier writers who, you know, focused on the stars. And that focus, again, is a visioning. I mean, we could ad infinitum, stretch it out, but I think the real thing is where do you find yourself in that narrative is what people need to consider. Where do you find yourself in the Afrofuturist narrative? Don't let it scare you. Don't let it set you aside. You've got visioning in your hearts. You should be setting goals. You should want to set goals for yourself, your family, your community, the planet,
right. The
universe. And so within that context, how does one achieve that level of visioning? Well, it's got to be informed. Immerse yourself in science fiction narratives and the like. Immerse yourself in the life and times and contributions of black scientists. Immerse yourself in the visions offered up by all of our other literary figures. Immerse yourself in the visions portrayed by our visual artists. Certainly something to be said for how much we immersed ourselves in that vision and that portrayal of Black Panther in cinema. There's more to come, more to come. You know, we got to build on that. Yeah. So, and I was getting ready to say, so visioning is the word, visioning.
And that's one of the things that I know that some people, I guess, are concerned about with Black Panther. But at the same time, it could be a great growth spurt because I know that, like with any movie that is a success, then the great fear is that everybody will then try to make almost like a carbon copy of it. And, you know, Panther is something that, that you can pull from other comic books, but you're not necessarily going to pull another Panther. But I know that that's a fear that we have with movies in general, that too often Hollywood gets into this carbon copy.
There are all, Yeah, there are already films in Nigeria, in Nollywood, which is that other big film, big film industry in Nigeria. There are already films out on the street already with Wakanda in the title. So visioning the nature of these films, you can hunt them down for yourself. But yeah, that whole notion, and that's another point of interest. Looking at Nigeria, there's Nnedi Okorafor is a Nigerian American. There's another young lady. What is it? Death and Bones of Children. Oh wow, the title's escaping me. New book just out by another young Nigerian American writer. Nigeria offers up a major example for this whole notion of visioning within the context of technology, culture, filmmaking, literature. Chinua Achebe, and need I say Fela Anikapulakpe Kuti. Fela, his music, that's visioning, Afrofuturist. He wanted a different Nigeria, and he was challenging it through the music.
Yeah, he was definitely challenging it through the music and definitely using the music and so many music that I have in order to find ways to challenge the status quo. Right. So we're seeing that even in the United States as well. People using music in order to challenge.
Mark, how about letting me close y'all out with a poem right quick? Because I've been on the road for a minute. I'm going to hit you with a poem and go on about my way because I'm on
that.
The road. And taking care of some things. We have a major forum on Underground Railroad history here in our state of North Carolina that I'll be a part of tomorrow. So I'm just getting out here to Little Washington. But let me hit you with this.
Please,
who stole my voodoo? By the time the comet came back again, who stole my voodoo when we were visited by AIDS, my friend? Who stole my voodoo? Africa's children do know. Who stole my voodoo? The beat of our bone songs grows. Who stole my voodoo? Middle passage, hear my cries. Who stole my voodoo? Bones beat, blues gods, arise. Bones beat, blues gods, arise. Bones beat, blues gods, arise. Visioning is the word. Kuji Chakalia, self-determination is the way. I'll catch you people somewhere, someplace on the planet. Peace.
Peace, my brother. Yeah. Appreciate you.
Appreciate that, Daryl. Definitely appreciate it. If folks are interested, real quick, in catching the thing that is tomorrow in Little Washington, we do have people listening throughout the area. Where exactly is it in Little Washington, and what exactly is the discussion going to be about? If you can give it to us in a short version or whatever.
I think he already drove through the dead zone. As soon as he said, peace, I'll see you good folks later, he exited stage left. So that was Daryl Stover, ladies and gentlemen. Dropping some knowledge on us.
Yeah, dropping all kinds of knowledge. We definitely appreciate Daryl dropping that knowledge on us, and he was definitely doing a great job with that. And I'm sure that he's having fun.
Uh-oh, you still there, Mark?
Still here.
Okay.
You still here? Yep.
Yeah, I'm still here, brother.
Yeah, I'm still. Cool. But as I was saying, Daryl's Facebook page is very active, so I'm sure that that thing on Little Washington will be there. So if you're in the Little Washington area and are interested in hearing him speak, then that's going to be about the underground. Daryl has been involved in a lot of things here in the community, including some of the things that are going on in our community. As I said, he's been part of the study of the cultural here in the area. So we'll have to get Daryl back on in the future to talk about some of that as well. But he would definitely lay in some serious science as to futurism and Afrofuturism. So I thought that there was some rich history there and everything. So what did you think, Dean? I'm sure you were engaged in the conversation and listening as you often do.
Oh, yeah. You know how I do. I kind of lay back and take everything in, man, you know. And each one of our guests have so much to share, wealth of knowledge and all those good things, and we greatly appreciate it here at the Voice of the People. And can't ask for anything else, man. You know, like, this is a phenomenal.
Oh, yeah. Well, like I said, we're just taking things by storm. As I was mentioning earlier, talked to a friend of mine earlier that did not know about the show, but hopefully they will be listening on a regular basis, as they've done a lot of things here in the community as well. So definitely looking forward to having them possibly as a guest. You know, next week we've got Mike Anderson as our guest, and as I said, Mike served 17 years in something that you know quite well, the penal system. But yeah, he's now helping a lot of folks get out of that, not even trying to be part of the system. And so he's teaching people about being entrepreneurs in the true sense of the word, so kind of like using some of their hustle skills, but using those hustle skills in a positive way and seeing that they can do great things. As a matter of fact, he was at Tribeca, I believe, last week, and they won a couple of awards, or at least were given some recognition. He just found out that he's going to be directing. Saw that on one of his pages as well. He's going to be directing a major, sounds like a, possibly a major Hollywood thing, but we'll be talking to him about that next Monday, because he's actually going to be calling in, and I think he'll be calling in from the L.A. area, even though home base is right here in North Carolina. But every time I talk to Mike, he's traveling somewhere or another, so he is definitely a man around, I'd say a man around the world, not just a man around the country, but a man around the world, because I know he travels quite a bit around the country, but I think every once in a while he might even get overseas and other places. So we're looking forward to hearing what he's got to say about what's going on in his world. And then we've got a labor activist on the 14th, Tula, who's actually one of my schoolmates at Marquette, but she's been involved with everything from, I believe, the AFL-CIO to the Solidarity Center that's based in D.C. to a bunch of other organizing kind of tools. And she's also done some work in other countries helping them get politically active and things of that nature. So we've got 2 weeks of very in-depth and rich conversations about to come your way, and I'm already lining up some new ones. I was talking to Monica Burns, so as soon as you get back from your trip, maybe 2 weeks later, so the first week in July, she'll be talking to us, and she is a sci-fi writer. So she, even though she's not African-American, I believe she might be Hispanic-American, and she might have some other things blended in as well, but she will be talking about her history and of being a writer and some of the things that she's gone through as a writer. Because, you know, as a woman writer, she's faced all kinds of stumbling blocks as well. Some that other people put there that don't need to be put there, that we have been learning about through the Me Too movement is going on throughout the industry of entertainment. So I think she's run across that as well as some other biases. So I'm sure that she'll be discussing that. And I've got a lady that suffered, who's from the, and I cannot think of the name of the disease, but it's basically the one that makes women prematurely bald. But she will be talking about that, and she's become an advocate.
Alopecia?
For, that's the one. That is the one. Thank you. I cannot think of the name, but she has had that disease for a number of years, and she will be talking about that, how, you know, going through the, it impacted her imaging of herself and things of that nature. So we're definitely looking forward to hearing this from Sandra DeBose. So even though she has that, she's also become somewhat of a prominent actress here in the area. So she will definitely have some interesting conversation as well. So as you can tell, we're lining up some amazing guests and some amazing conversations. So we need to get more people engaged. Now, one of the things, and I'm hoping that he's going to call in on one of these shows, but you will find this interesting thing. I was talking about before Daryl called some of the things that I had done over the weekend. One of the things that I did on Sunday was I was, you know, as I do oftentimes, I was trolling the web and seeing what else was going on in the web, and I stumbled across this Indian brother. Siri is his name, I believe, S-R-E-E. But he actually reads the New York Times every Sunday online as a Facebook Live program. So it's kind of like our show, Blog Talk, but he's reading the New York Times, and he's going through it. His partner in crime, he's in New York City. His partner in crime was actually in New York with him today because he was there for, I think, a conference or some family business or something. But usually his partner in crime is in D.C. So, like, you're in New Jersey and I'm here in North Carolina. They're in usually separate places. He's, as he calls it, his digital wingman. So, like, I guess you would be my digital wingman.
Yes, sir.
And so he was talking about that, and they were just literally going through the paper and making comments about what was in the New York Times, and they've had some amazing guests, including some amazing commentators. One of the commentators who I think I chit-chatted with while I was doing the show was a Pulitzer Prize winner. I'm not sure if they're New York Times or what paper they're with, but they were definitely a Pulitzer Prize winner. And then some of the people that were on the show were newspaper folks themselves, so they definitely had a, you know, interesting take on the newspaper industry, and so that was really interesting. And it's their show lasts for, I'd say, about an hour, hour and a half, but it was really interesting participating in that. In this case, the participation was not vocal, even though I could have used my tablet or my computer and gone vocal and gone talking to them directly, but in this case, I was just typing some responses back to them. But they literally replayed back what I told them. So if you go on my page on Facebook, you can actually see where I posted it on one of my primary pages. So if you go on there and you see a Facebook Live post, that is the one that I was part of yesterday morning. So it was definitely some interesting conversation. They were talking about everything, some of the issues that we talked about, they talked about. I mean, I heard conversations about some of the things going on in the sports world, definitely Cosby, definitely some of the other things that are being faced in the news, and they went through all the sections, including, like, the art section. So it was quite an interesting concept. So, like I said, I'm hoping that I believe his wingman was named Neil, but I'm definitely hoping that Siri and Neil would join us, because I extended them an invitation to join us any Monday that they felt that they could.
Nice. And we definitely want to grow the family, man. That's a definite, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But that's one of the things I'm trying to do now, is I'm trying to go out there and reach out to other people that are doing shows, be that on Blog Talk, be that on other mediums, Facebook Live, be that on whatever mediums I can find out, so we can extend and grow the family. Because, like I said, I love talking to our guests, and I know that we oftentimes ask interesting questions and things of that nature. And I know you like sitting back in the cut and throwing out your comments every once in a while, but we do want it to become even more and more of a open and steady dialogue between a variety of people. So we're definitely working on building that up. Now that we've built up the state and the countries, our next step, we know we're still going for 50 before you go on your cruise, but even though we're still going for the 50, we are still shooting for building up an audience as well. So we want to, but an engaged audience. We have an audience, but we want more of an engaged audience where they're calling in as well. As a matter of fact, I think I'm going to drop that number just in case anybody's listening and wants to engage in the next few minutes. But 646-668-8393. And like I said, we're always willing to hear from other people. Maybe they've got some thoughts, because one thing that I was going to mention before Daryl joined us, that it's scary, and I want to know what you're talking about.
Yeah, we got somebody here.
This is just Daryl. I was listening in because I had no other way of listening. I wanted to hear the rest of the show while I'm moving on down the road. If that's okay, if I need to clear the line so that someone else can call in, I'll do that.
No, brother, you are perfectly fine to stay right there where you are.
As a matter of fact, Daryl, before you duck out, one of the things after you did your poem that I was asking was where exactly the event at Little Washington is going to be, and if you want to just tell people really briefly what the event is going to be, because like I said, you have definitely been a student of history, particularly the history of North Carolina and even some other parts of the country as well. But I know you're going to drop all kinds of knowledge about some of this historical stuff, but if you just give us like a little brief synopsis as to what the event is and what's going on tomorrow.
Oh, y'all going to reel me back into the conversation, even though I just want to listen, but that's fine. It is important to understand that folks, African American Heritage Commission has an initiative called Freedom Roads, and there are several educator trainings happening in the state tied to that initiative. And so this is the first one, which is taking place at the Washington Waterfront Underground Railroad Museum in Washington, North Carolina, right there on the water, down east, as they say. And it's happening from 9 to 4 on tomorrow at the Convention Center for the town of Washington, which is on the backside, just behind that Waterfront Underground Railroad Museum.
Ooh. And is this a free and open to the public event, or is it an event?
It's a training for those who want to engage in educating about
North Carolina's Underground Railroad history, and it is free.
Okay, cool. So if you're interested in that and wanted to engage in that and have some knowledge, need for that kind of training, I'm sure that Daryl will give, as well as the other presenters, will give all kinds of necessary information that will make their presentations even more clear to those that are learning about the underground history.
The keynote speaker is Wanda McLean, who is a major advocate and historian of Eastern North Carolina history tied to the Underground Railroad. She's also the one-woman hit squad that pulled together the documentation and made the application such that this waterfront museum and region in Washington, North Carolina, is on the Road to Freedom trail, which is part of the National Park Service. The other location that she worked hard for that to happen is with the Great Dismal Swamp, which was a major place of salvation for our ancestors who took their freedom, keeping in mind that we don't use slaves because that's not who they were solely. We take away their dignity and humanity by using that term. These were freedom-seeking people, and we need to become more engaged in using that terminology and speaking about our antecedents.
Yeah, we do sometimes get too stuck up in using terms that are not all of what they were about, because so many of them were struggling to try to find their own freedom and get to a much better place than what they were in, and we oftentimes forget that part of that history. So I'm glad y'all are doing this very important work, because it's definitely very much needed and necessary. Oh, and last thing, and I promise I'm not dragging you back into the conversation, is if folks are wanting to get in touch with you just in general, maybe hear more of that wonderful poetry, because you do such amazing poetry. We did get a taste of it at the closing, but if they want to hear more of it, where can they find you? I know we can find you on Facebook, but where are some of the other places that folks can find you if they're interested in learning more about what Daryl has published and is doing just in general?
Well, you know, you can always call me. You know, I'm a very transparent guy. You know, I'm about the business of community and people and empowering us through art, history, culture, and science. And so within that context, if anybody wants to call me directly at 919-641-8674, you got me. And
that's how they can get you.
I can shoot out the email as well.
Yeah, please do shoot the email as well.
Yeah, that's D.C. as in Washington, D.C., as DC SciPoet, SciPoet, at gmail.com. Again, like I said, I've had that license plate since I first moved here in 1996. SciPoet is my license plate. DC SciPoet at gmail.com is my email address. And I like the conversations that you brothers have. I'm glad you invited me in to be a part of this evening's discussion.
And we definitely appreciate you being here. And as I tell everybody that's been on, whether it's been you, Masadi, Angel's been on as well, and several other people that you know, Jillian, y'all are always welcome to come back on and to join the conversation on a regular basis. We're here every Monday between 7 and 9. Brother Deed is going to escape in June for a couple of weeks, so we 2 week break in June because he and his wife are celebrating. What anniversary are y'all celebrating, Dean?
It's 15 years married, 17 years total together. To, you know, so
all right,
I'm ready to take off.
And congratulations!
Thank you. We'll take off and see a little bit of the world for a week or so, and then we'll be back to our regularly scheduled program. You know.
Exactly, so that's going to be sometime in June.
Right.
They're going to disappear. And Daryl can definitely relate, because as I said, Daryl has got a very rich as well, including, you know, I'm big fans not just of Daryl, but of both of his kids and his wife, who's done a lot of amazing work in the community as well. So, and y'all met when y'all were in school, didn't you, Daryl? So you're probably pushing near what? Are you almost on the 30-year mark?
What's that again?
I said anniversary-wise, are you almost on the 25 or 30-year mark? You and
we will be 27.
27
nice.
In December.
Wow. So in December they'll be
that's how old I'll be too.
So what you guys say is that you got married when you were a baby. I understand. I like that concept.
Mhm. From the get go.
Yeah, got it. So there's like, I saw her in the crib. I said, that's got to be my wife.
I got a neighbor that's what that is. They're from Louisiana, live up the street from me in Cary, and that's just what it was for them.
They met
in the same hospital. Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Now, that's deep. So they met each other the same. They were in the same hospital and have been together probably since.
Mm-hmm.
Grew up together,
mm-hmm.
and they got married when they were teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
So they've been together for however long they've been living. They've been together that long. Now, that's some serious commitment right there.
Yeah.
Nice.
Like, that's the power of the ancestors saying, this is what it's going to be.
Indeed.
this is your person. You better get used to it. If you're trying to step off and get somebody else, we're not having it. So we just go let you know you two are committed to each other and just get over it. Those ancestors can be real powerful. But sometimes the ancestors don't tell you about it until after y'all have ducked in and out and tried to ignore the message from the ancestors. Because, you know, that's one of the things that, as you know, there we sometimes don't always listen to with the conversations from our ancestors. Cause
hard head makes a soft bottom.
Whether it's relationship, whether it's work, whether it's whatever, we oftentimes do not want to listen, and then we be sitting there regretting it when we fall and have those hard falls from being in things we didn't need to be in. So, like I said, always listen to those ancestors, but we need to listen to them on a basis because they talk to us regularly, whether it's through dreams, whether it's through messages from friends, whether it's through whatever. They are constantly talking to us, but you know, some of us are stubborn and don't want to listen.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll be that.
I think we're moving into a period where you cannot avoid what is before us in regards to hearing and engaging the message
right. And
the actions that need to take place. And all of it is about communications. You got to have your antenna up. That's why I have an afro.
That's
my antenna.
The afro is Daryl's antenna. He's keeping that antenna up so that folks can, they got the message to send to him from the ancestral lands. He is still listening. Daryl, I'm sure you're probably still getting messages. You know, I alluded to them earlier. And I sometimes think I'm still hearing from them. I'm sure you're still getting messages from Brother Chuck, even though it's going to be almost a year later on this year, on Mother's Day, that he would have been gone from us for a year.
This is true. I got to sit down with him February of last year working on a documentary. I was just so glad that I got to sit down with him. At his home, and I'm about to start engaging in the hard chore. There's still some more interviewing that has to be done and some more shooting that has to be done, including up in New York. But I'll be sitting down looking at that footage and transcribing with the help of an app, which makes this process a whole lot easier these days. But, he is still with us, very much so.
Yeah,
actually, I had one of my students at NC State. She did her class presentation on his legacy. I was like, go ahead, girl, go ahead, get down.
Yeah, that legacy is still very rich. As a matter of fact, I had told Sister Medina that I was going to get her book, and I actually did get the book this year with her children's tribute to Baba Chuck.
Medina.
So I'm glad.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I got the book. I got the book that she wrote, Baba Chuck, Dancer for Peace. And I can tell you that if you haven't got that book and you have children that are of a young age and want to learn about that legacy, you definitely need to get this book because, like I said, I picked it up and it definitely covers his – it gives you a feel for Baba Chuck in these short pages and everything. But, you know, it's a children's book, but still within those children's book context, you get the feel of Baba Chuck.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't got that book, you definitely need to get it. So it definitely even explains some of the history of what he was all about in the context of the children's book world. So definitely, if you're not familiar with the book, I would strongly recommend Baba Chuck, Dancer for Peace. And there's no doubt that he was definitely a dancer for peace.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, I first met Baba Chuck up in D.C. before I moved here. I had no idea when I met him I was going to be moving here. But certainly after moving here, I had been given my walking papers by so many cultural stalwarts in D.C. At least 14 or 15 folks must have said to me, well, you're going to North Carolina. You know who you need to get in touch with? Baba Chuck. So I ran into him at Centerfest. Mark, downtown Durham, and introduced myself to him. He thought I was a dancer because I gave him greetings from several dance companies. I had to let him know I only dance at parties. But when I told him I was a poet and shared with him a poem on one of his contemporaries and good friends, Sister Pearl Primus, he was like, yeah, we're going to put you to work. And I knew that that also obligated me within my role as a griot to script a poem in celebration of him. I won't share that this evening, but I'll probably hold off and share it on some other evening with y'all. But that poem was delivered to him on his 70th birthday.
Yeah, a lot of people, I'm sure, over the course of the several years will be continuing doing tributes to Baba Chuck because, like I said, he was such a force here in the area, and we know he would definitely continue to be celebrated, and it's just another way for us to continue to honor that great legacy that he gave, not just to here, but to the world, because, like I said, he's not just known here.
He's got a host of disciples out there when you start looking at so many people who have come under his tutelage, mentorship, guidance and direction, inspiration and education. It is a very rich community out there, not just here in North Carolina, but globally, that I think his legacy is intact and our culture is intact within the context of those many folks that he has worked with that are carrying forward.
Yeah, there's no doubt that he's one of the people I know that definitely inspired you and that you definitely looked up to when they were living. I think that you also alluded to, and I knew him as being one of your inspirations, the fact that you were really oftentimes inspired by Amira Baraka, or as you said earlier, known as Leroy Jones back in his early days.
Yeah. Well, both he and Larry Neal inspire my pen and my intellect. So that book that they co-edited, Black Fire, set the stage. I mean, if you want to really immerse yourself in some rich literary heritage, you check out the work of Larry Neal, but also check out the work of Amiri as well, and not just immerse yourself in the poetry. Engage the essays. Amiri has some science fiction, short fiction, that he's written. You know, Amiri was writing in all formats. You know, he was writing plays, poetry, essays, short fiction, low cues, as he calls them, among other things. So, yeah, and very highly informed about our music. And, you know, you look at his book, Blues People, and, you know, you that me as an ethnomusicologist is informed by the reach and timeline that he gives us for understanding our musical heritage.
No doubt about that. He definitely gives us that rich heritage and gets us to do that. Now, Sarah, we're supposed to be the conversation accidentally again, but I'm gonna ease you out one more time, and then we're going to wrap it up and everything. But I want to ease you out one more time because I cannot be having Daryl on with just one point. Can you drop one more? It can be a blues point. It can be anything. It doesn't have to be the Papa
Give us one
can
more,
drop
brother.
One more point.
Yeah, oh, I ain't right. Yeah, you know, I'm riding with two of my other colleagues, and God, I'm not at the wheel, so I can try to share one more something or other, but I just have to impress upon you guys that, you know, y'all doing wonderful work, and I was hoping to hear some other folks call in and chat and dialogue and keep.
Hey, you will definitely
discourse
hear that in the future.
Going.
Yeah. We love keeping the discourse going, and that's what we're trying to do on a regular basis here. So definitely keep your radio locked in on the internet on this show, and we're also on Spreaker and TuneIn, and I forgot all the different other avenues. I know I just put in for Spotify, so I'm hoping to hear that they will be letting us join their family as well. So hopefully that'll be coming up in the very near future. But before you get out of here, I got to hear one more, Daryl.
Oh, are you going to do that to me sitting in a got me sitting in a dark car with a book of poetry. hold on. Let's see what I can do here. The light is not going to do right by me. So maybe let's do this. We'll do, since you mentioned her, let's do Sister Disappeared on You for Assata Shakur. And as everyone knows or should know, Assata Shakur was a member of the Black Panther Party. Now residing in Cuba, she was in a cadre in New Jersey. She is Tupac Shakur's aunt, and it goes like this: Assata, Assata, Assata Shakur, Assata, Assata, Assata Shakur, Assata, Assata, Assata Shakur, Assata, Assata, Assata Shakur. Assata Shakur rocked your world when she escaped from your prisons and jails. Hurt your heart because you didn't want her to tell her glorious tales. Lies are lies, and now yours die a hard and disgraceful death. You know what you did. You can't keep it all hid. J. Eggers now rocking from right to left. Assata, Assata, Assata Shakur. Assata, Assata, Assata Shakur. Peace to the prophets among us and unborn. Keep killing and we still keep coming on. Inspired by the sister we see, how the struggle can be one with the refusal to give in. One through self-determination. Black Panther's dream, 60s scene, no, not just a trend or a fad. She represents that greater strength we had and continue to have. Come on now, Assata, Assata, Assata Shakur. Assata, Assata, Assata Shakur. Grand gracias to Cuba giving freedom on earth for our bold sister's freedom rebirth. Once railroaded, but now she's free. Our struggle continues to be one only when you and me have read our history. Power fists, free the land, to fight, together we stand. Our spirits will never be tamed. The sister has made her claim, got hip to your cop court killing game. She who struggles is her name. Let the seeds be planted as children chant it. Assata, Assata, Assata Shakur. Let the seeds be planted as children chant it. Assata, Assata, Assata Shakur. Let the seeds be planted as children chant it. Assata, Assata, Assata Shakur. Assata, Assata, Assata Shakur. Assata, Assata, Assata Shakur. Assata, Assata, Assata Shakur. Fight the power. All right, you brothers.
Fight the power.
Keep it in the middle of the road.
All right, we
be
will definitely
strong,
do that.
And don't stop what y'all
got going on, all right?
I appreciate
you, bro.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, peace.
We greatly appreciate Daryl dropping that one. And he even gave you a little reference to your area, New Jersey, so I'm sure that you were terribly appreciative of that. Brother Dean, since that is your stomping grounds for several years after you moved away from Virginia. So you've been stumbling around in New Jersey for a while, and you got a little bit of a reference in that point to a true civil rights icon.
Indeed, indeed. Greatly appreciate Brother Stover being on the show and dropping some knowledge on us. And what I forgot to tell him, his voice is being heard in 38 states and 38 countries. So we're continuing to grow. Again, we appreciate all our listener support, and we can't do it without you, man. We can't.
Cannot do it without the listeners, and we definitely appreciate it. Matter of fact, I was looking on that list. I saw some countries and some states, and I didn't even realize we were in. So I thought that we were got folks listening in Zambia and Zimbabwe, Morocco and Ghana and Nigeria. So we got people listening in Iran, India, and China, just to name a few of the countries.
Indeed. We might put the list out there, shout out list, to all of our states and all of our countries, because again, we appreciate all of you. You know, you can find us on the Facebook at facebook.com. Look up the Voice of the People or facebook.com/TVOTP14. All right. We're also on Twitter, the Voice of the People. Look for the flaming microphone with the fist in the air. That's us. We're there. The platforms you talked about, Stitcher, Spreaker, TuneIn, here on Blog Talk Radio, of course, iHeartRadio, and we're trying to get to Spotify. We're going to be trying to get to Google Play. So, you know, the Voice of the People with Dean Geronimo and Mark Lee, we're just trying to get it, man. We appreciate y'all for coming with us on the ride.
Yeah, we appreciate them coming on the ride. Definitely appreciate it. And we're trying to get to all those platforms that we can find. No doubt about that. Now, one thing that I was going to mention real quickly before we close out the show totally and everything, is which really scared me, and I said I wasn't going to mention his name, so I'm not going to mention him by name, but there is talk, scary talk, that the person whose name we don't like to mention might be trying to win the Nobel Peace Prize.
In the alternate universe, in Stranger Things, they called that the Upside Down. So in the Upside Down, he may very well win the Nobel Peace Prize, but I'm not quite sure if he'll win that on the Right Side Up, which we call the day-to-day here in these United States.
Let's hope not. Let's hope not. But there is talk of people trying to negotiate for him winning because of what's going on in Korea. But I'm really hoping that that parallel universe doesn't happen.
I hope not either, because you know what? I give more credit to the Koreans, both North and South, for putting aside the differences and making a change for the better. Now, some people say, oh, he's responsible for that. Okay, whatever. Be responsible for the change here on this land, where, you know, you stop hiring those individuals who claim they're in fear for their life when they've been scared all their lives, that have given, you know, have mistreated individuals because they have perceived power and a bad, you know, those individuals who walk with those tiki torches and scream racism, do something about those individuals. And then maybe we'll pay you some attention. In fact, you know what? You really want to help me out? Zero out my damn student loans and make education free. Stop spending the money in all the other countries. Bring it back home. Bring our soldiers back home who are fighting for different battles that, you know what? It's like the bully at school, you know, making other people fight their battles for them or whatever. But let's bring that money back home. Let's take care of our homeless. Let's take care of our veterans. Let's take care of those that want to learn a trade so that they can make more money. You know, don't be like Uncle Ben, who wants to raise the rent on those who are less fortunate. How does that work? You know what I mean? You want to raise the rent on public housing. How simple-minded does that sound? But then again, we're talking about simple-minded people in a place where they shouldn't be.
That is very true. And even the student loans came up as well, because I saw that some of the universities that are more like your universities that are online universities, that some of those people, there's at least one case, and I was trying to find which university it was, but that university is, I think, totally not accredited and totally not being accepted, but the students are still facing the possibility of having to pay these astronomical student loans. So there is some fight about that as to whether that is going to happen or not. But hopefully these folks, if they are going to spend all these hours on trying to get a trade and trying to get a leg up in this society, hopefully they will not find themselves suffering from these crazy rules and having to pay back some student loans and not even having the skill that they were supposed to have. So I did see that in the paper, so hopefully that is not going to be the case, that they face these really hard times because of going through that whole system and not necessarily being able to get the benefits of what they should have been getting.
Wow.
But, I mean, it's here's the university. The university is actually the Corinthian, which is a former Santa Ana, California-based company that primarily offered certificates and associate degree programs nationwide to its Everett, Hale, and Wild Tech colleges. But like I said, they are pretty much defunct, but now there is a pivotal case over student loans, which is now heading to the courts. So we hope that the courts will make the correct decision and not have these people have to spend all this money and not even have the skill set that they were supposedly going to school to get.
That's crazy. And that's how people get beat up.
Yeah. That's how people get caught up in bad situations. You know, we've got to give a shout out. You know, I'm not really a big time, because there are other players that I like better, but I cannot deny LeBron. LeBron has been bringing it for Cleveland, and he brought it again, so he did get them to the next round. I don't know what they're going to do with Toronto, but he did bring them to the next round. And like I said, the man is amazing with what he's been doing. So I'm going to have to give him some credit. And we'll see what he does in the next round. And speaking of sports, you may not know this. I think I might have mentioned it in a past show, but I am a big fan of the Kentucky Derby. Horses are amazing animals, and you put a jockey on them, and they can move really fast with quick lightning. So I am curious to see, is this the year that we get another Triple Crown? You know, it's a big battle every year. Usually doesn't happen, so we'll see if it happens this time around and who the contenders are. I haven't studied to see who the contenders are, but ever since Fear and Loathing, and those of you that grew up in the 70s know Hunter S. Thompson, the great Gonzo journalist, and I was a big fan of his, but ever since Fear and Loathing, I have said that one of these days I am going to attend a Kentucky Derby, because to me it looks like just one big party, and I, even in my late 50s, am down for a big party every once in a while. So I say that one of these days I'm going to make it to a Kentucky Derby. It won't be this year, but one of these years I'm going to make it there.
You know what? I think you're going to enjoy yourself too. You're going to have a good time.
Hey, like I said, that to me looks like just one big party, and there's nothing wrong with a big party and things of that nature. And last but not least, as we get ready to close out this particular night of this program and everything, let us hope, because this is the other article that really caught my eye, that the Supreme Court can finally make some decisions, because it looks like with 2 months to go in the high courts, they still got several cases that they got to resolve, and we're talking some big cases. They still got to deal with immigration, because they're trying to find out if the travel ban against 5 predominantly Muslim countries is legal and constitutional. They still got to deal with gay rights and religious liberties, because they want to know whether a Colorado baker who specialized in custom wedding cakes and refused to create one for a same-sex couple. So that's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out. And even in your state of New Jersey, there's a major case. So they want to know, can the federal government block state from repealing laws that ban betting on college and professional sports? A 1992 law says so. The New Jersey's challenge to the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act could act as a springboard to legalize sports betting in other states as well. So y'all might be driving the whole concept of state betting. And I'm just looking here at some of the other cases. Florida's got a freedom of speech case. Hawaii has got an immigration travel ban case. Illinois has got a public employee union fees case. Maryland has got a partisan election map. I'm sure they're not the only one. Michigan has got cell phone location tracking, which we know that can be dangerous, because they can track all kinds of stuff, as we learned through Facebook. Ohio has got a voter registration purge case, and South Dakota has got online sales taxes. So there are definitely some major cases, including some other election maps, that are on the tap. We're going to see which way the federal court falls. They've even got a major California abortion case, because it says in California require anti-abortion pregnancy centers to post notice informing clients about state-funded abortion and contraceptive services. Challengers say the law forces them to promote procedures they oppose. The state says the centers often deceive and misinform women. So I think that they ought to have both cases in there, and that they ought to be able to present both cases even at the centers themselves. That's just my opinion, but I think that if you're going to be telling one tale, you need to have the other tale told as well.
Wow. It's going to be busy, huh?
It's going to be a busy Supreme Court. Like I said, they got 2 months. So I think the Supreme Court closes out with 2 months. That's May, June. So the end of June, maybe 1st of July. So it's going to be real busy. But apparently they have been procrastinating on some of these cases, because it said that they had gone, that those cases I mentioned, as well as some others, constitute, what was the percentage? It was, after several months in which the court heard 63 oral arguments, 39 cases, 62% of the total remain unresolved. So it says only 23 cases have been decided, the fewest at this point in a term since at least 1900.
Whew.
So that woman that passed away that we mentioned last week, because I think we said she made it to 117, the last time that this few cases had been decided, she was a baby, if she was not in her mama's womb.
My goodness.
So we can put it in context. The last time that this happened, that woman that we referenced last week, who died at 117, she was either just born, which means that she was in a crib, or she was in her mother's womb, depending on when exactly it happened. But definitely, she was a major baby, and she made it to 117. So if that don't have you put it into context, it was a long time ago.
Yeah, very, very long. Like the country folks said, long, long, long time ago. Oh, my God.
As a matter of fact, here's another interesting thing. It says that free speech is also one of the things that they haven't gotten around to talking about, because it says, can police stop someone from speaking at a public meeting if they believe he is violating the law? Faced with Florida resident Fan Lozman's second lawsuit to reach the Supreme Court, the justices appear to think not. So we're going to see if they think that how far free speech can actually go. And, you know, another major thing is it's definitely going to be on the minds of a lot of people, and that's another article that I saw earlier today, is the whole concept of the mentally ill of any kind of type having access to guns, because they actually listed several of the people that have killed people over the last several years, that was one of the issues that they were facing, was the fact that they were having some serious mental issues going on and everything. So that is definitely going to be something that folks are going to be paying very close attention to, is some of these laws that might impact. As a matter of fact, these are some of the ones that they name, that the overwhelming of people with mental illness are not valid. But it says Rinkin, he's the one that did the Waffle House, joined America's growing ranks of those clearly known to be emotionally unstable and threatening, yet who still manage to arm themselves and commit slaughter. Among those include Sung-Hoo Cho, who killed 32 at Virginia Tech in 2007, Jared Lovner, who shot Representative Gabby Giffords and 18 others in 2011, and Alex, who gunned down 12 at the Washington Navy Yard in 2013, and high school shooter Nicholas Cruz, who ended 17 lives on Valentine's Day in Parkland, Florida. So I don't know what you think, but I definitely think that while I think that people definitely have the rights to have guns and bear arms, I have no problem with that. I think that it's almost a necessity in this day and time that we live in. There's got to be some serious new restrictions placed on some of these guns. There are certain kinds of guns that nobody needs. I'm sorry, if you're going hunting, you do not need an AK-47. If you try to kill a turkey with an AK-47, there's not going to be much meat for you to eat.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what?
That's just
yeah, certain people do not have the right to bear arms, but the trick is finding out who those certain people are.
That is very
true. Now, you know, you can either restrict everyone from having a gun, because you really going to have to give folks a psychological evaluation, which, you know what, may be a good requirement. One of those, not one of those simple tests like tell me what you see, or they ask you a certain question four different ways. I'm not talking about that. You need a deep psychological evaluation. If you apply for a gun permit, hell, if you want the gun, take the test. You know, and if you fail the test, then your ass will never legally own a gun. Parents who give their children weapons and their children go out and commit heinous acts should be charged as accessories before the fact. And whatever comes of it, comes of it. You know, you can't say, oh, I didn't know he was going to do that. You knew your damn son or your daughter was crazy when you gave him the damn weapon. So don't come back and act all surprised. And don't tell us he was a good kid. Nobody wants to hear that shit. He may have been good when he was smaller. People do change. And things happen, you know, where anybody could snap and have lived an upright and upstanding life and then make a change. The same, by the same token, those who have done wrong serve their time and make a change and come out and do some great things. So, you know, when we get hooked on what's right and what's wrong based on past performance, that is not an indicator of future ability. And once we start to think logically and not emotionally, you'll be able to tell somebody, be like, you know what, you did these good works over here, but now you've made this mistake. And however, whatever you did in the past, we appreciate you for that. But right now, you have to answer for all of the things that you have done. There's no getting out of it. I don't know. This is an extreme thought of mine, but maybe we need to go back. Well, we didn't even go there. Maybe we need to adopt some things that other countries doing, which here is considered cruel and unusual. If you rape someone, castration is the answer. If you rob someone, then something is taken from you. You know, if you steal something, the hand you stole it with gets cut off. You know, and maybe, just maybe, you kill somebody, we're going to kill you the same way. So you set their house on fire and burn them up, we'll just put you in a house, put you in an abandoned building so we don't have to lose anything, and do you the same way. Then there'll be deterrence for ignorant behavior. But right now, I mean, for someone who grew up in the system, comes out, commits a crime, and goes back to that same system in which they spent 10, 15, 20 years, that is no deterrent. That is just something to make some people feel safe. And I'm using quotations in that. Right. You know, well, he's off the street now. Hell, he was only on the street for 22 days. And
exactly.
He went back to what he knew. You know, some people are meant to be in certain places. Is everyone supposed to be locked up? No. But there are some people who belong in the penal system. There are some people who belong, that should not have a public service job. They make everybody else who puts on that uniform and walks out of that house with the hopes of coming back the same way that they left, makes all of them look bad. And some people say, well, why don't the good cops rat out the bad cops? And it's not as easy as you think, because the way it's set up, most of your quote-unquote bad cops have actually moved up in positions, so you're reporting a bad cop to another bad cop. Where does it go? But when the community starts to get involved and they start to speak out against it, not march and clog up the police department, but now you got to get in touch with your legislators and those the Justice Department, you know, and make those things known. Because now you put the heat on it, some things change. Everything won't change, but it's a start.
And that's what we got to do. We definitely got to look at some of those other alternatives and things of that nature. Don't know that I necessarily am ready for some of the harsher crimes that you were, harsher penalties you were talking about, but it's definitely something that we have to think about. I'm not saying I'm not ready, but it's something we might have to think about. I personally might not be ready for that, but you may have a point, so I'm willing to listen to it and see where our minds are. Maybe that's something that folks can think about next week, because next week we'll have Mike Anderson, who, as I said, was in the system for 17 years for a major crime and is now doing some very positive work out there after acknowledging some of the things that he did and some of the, and even some of the reasoning as to why he did what he did. Some of it, I'm sure, it was involving around the way he was raised and grew up and things of that nature. Some of it was probably some of the people he hung out with. But all of that we will find out next week when Mike calls us and also talks about how he is telling kids not to go down the path that he went because it was not the right path. So it's going to be some very interesting conversations. And like I said, a lot of people forget about the things that even with this case that were in the background. I did not know until I was reading the paper earlier today. And, you know, sometimes major pressure can lead people to do some stupid things. And I did not realize until I was reading the article that apparently the guy that did this shooting and everything had a major crush on Taylor Swift to the point that he was even talking about Taylor Swift was communicating with him. You know, I doubt that very seriously.
I doubt it too. Maybe in his mind, you know what I mean? In his mind and in his own little world, I mean, maybe they were together. Who knows? And see, that's the kind of weird things that this fool will be given a job of public trust or something like that. And then you wonder, how did he get there? Well, somebody wasn't paying attention when they stamped off on it. So now we have to kind of like keep our heads on the swivel, stay involved, you know, stay active, voice your opinion, and make sure that your opinion is heard. Take all of the emotion out, speak from a place of logic, have your facts right there. And it's not too much that people can do when you throw facts right there and say, hey, look, I want you to check this out real quick. You know,
and part of it, and a part of it, just real quickly, is I hear the music. I know we're pretty much all done and everything, but part of it is he couldn't control being hired because apparently he was hired by a family-owned business. So he was hired by his own family. I mean, where he was working at labor, he was not working for his dad. But initially, the company that he was with for a number of years, he was working for a crane company that his dad basically ran. I think it was a family-owned business. So, you know, those kind of crazy people that are working for the family, you really can't see much about them other than to try to keep your eyes on them and try to tell their boss, their dad, what's going on. But, you know, that's the other thing that you got to pay attention to sometimes, that whole nepotism thing that goes on in a lot of companies that, you know, they might be hiring people that they even know are a little bit different, but, hey, it's family, and you got to look out for family, or at least that's their attitude.
Oh, my goodness. Headache. Wow. Yeah, man. So, you know what? We're wrapping this up. But again, thanks to everyone who supports the Voice of the People. 7 o'clock Monday night. We will let you know in advance when we take a pause for the call. But we keep coming back and we keep rolling strong. 38 states, 38 countries. Host extraordinaire Mark Lee. I'm producer, the sixth man, Dean Geronimo. Catch us the replay here on Blog Talk Radio, Stitcher, Spreaker, TuneIn, and of course, we're part of the iHeartRadio family. So, with that being said, this is sixth man, Dean Geronimo. You can actually catch me on Thursday. I'll be guest hosted on Let's Talk About It on WBKS1.com. So, I'll be there this week. But my home is here at the Voice of the People. So we appreciate you, and we see you next week.
Peace. Have a good one.